Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, is presented by Parasite Systems. I'm your host today, Doug Simcox, and I'm recording at my daughter Kathleen's house up here in Corydon, Indiana. A bit of trivia for you. I don't know if you know this, but Corydon, which is just up across the river, just a bit west of Louisville, up across the Ohio River, used to be, at one time, was the state capital of Indiana. So kind of a cool little town, small little town. I hope that you're doing well as we head into the final months of rodeo. I hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. The fall weather is headed our way. Cooler days are coming. The leaves are starting to turn. And up north, you've got to have some very bright colors going on. And as you travel to all these rodeos up and down the road, stay safe. Keep your eyes up. Hands free as you take us with you on your travels. Two hands on the wheel. And again, we want to say how much we appreciate being able to go with you on your travels. And I know a lot of you folks are traveling overnight, long runs, long days, big days. So be safe as you go up and down the road. A couple of shout outs. The BTC bus is back on the road. I want to say thank you to Shelbyville Diesel and Machine Repair, Shane and Henry, right there in Shelbyville, Kentucky. What a great job they did. They went through the truck from front bumper to the rear bumper, did all the right things, put us back on the road. And speaking of being on the road, the first weekend of October, we're going to be at Mike Swearingen's birthday and rodeo reunion up there in Wyoming, New York, up around Rochester. So excited to go up there. We're going to see a lot of friends and a lot of folks from the Northeast. No doubt we're going to come away with a lot of great stories. And today in our episode, we have Randy Steffen back with us, Hyco, Texas. His episode came out last week. This is part two. And at the end of every recording that I do with my guests, with our guests, I always remind them that if memories come up that they went, oh, I should have said this or I should have told that story, simply give me a call. And he did. And we had two great conversations after the initial recording. So more stories and adventures. And man, he covers a lot of ground. And we had so much fun. What I really enjoy about doing this podcast is that I get to meet new people like Randy and Marilee, his wife, and her episode's going to be coming out here in 2 weeks. And just having great conversations and learning about different folks. It's through those relationships that we begin to see the world maybe just a bit different, and we understand how many things we have in common and how interesting these people are around us. So we hope that you enjoy this episode.
We're at a rodeo in Illinois somewhere, and they had a skydiver that was supposed to land in the arena. Well, he jumped out of the plane and come close to the arena and missed the arena, and he landed on the back of my pickup horse and fell to the ground, and Marilee was holding the horse, and the cords from the parachute got tangled around the saddle horn, and of course the horse took off, dragging this guy through the parking lot. And I think about every cowboy at the rodeo was out there helping, trying to catch the horse, and we finally got the horse stopped, and everything was all right. And Needless to say, I was a little upset. And I started to go to this guy, and I remember a cowboy grabbing me and said, "No, your horse is okay. Your horse is okay." But everybody was more concerned about the horse than they were this guy that just jumped out of a plane. You know, that was something that never happened again, probably.
No, I would say not. Not even if you tried. Not even if you tried. Could have been quite spectacular. You know, land on the back of a pig. Yeah.
You guys, I could imagine with a tangle on that saddle horn, them strings, horse dragging this. I wonder what this guy was thinking, you know? I believe it was Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Steve Gander had a rodeo out there, and he hired Spider-Man. And I believe it was the original Spider-Man to go around talking to the kids in the arena. Well, he wanted to ride a horse as he did this little spiel. Well, he didn't tell us he didn't know how to ride. Well, he gets on the horse and goes out there, the horse takes off into a lope and he's loping around the arena, and this guy's hollering for help. And I rode in on my pickup horse and caught the horse up, and he's going, "Oh, get me off this horse, get me off this horse." And all the time the kids in the stands are hollering, "Shoot your web, shoot your web." And so I got the guy to the Granger gate, and he got off, and he walked out there and did his little talk.
Okay.
he didn't want no part of the horse anymore.
Enough of that.
Yeah, it was really funny to see a Spider-Man flopping around.
How in the world did Steve find, I mean, we heard about Festus, we heard about Hoss off of Gunsmoke, right?
All right.
And Dollar, how did he get access to these pretty cool acts, actually?
Yeah, I don't know. Steve had access to about all the country singers. He knew, you know, how he could get hold of them and what they charged, and, you know,
yeah.
he had a way of finding things, you know.
Yeah.
But he was a great promoter. Yeah, we never talk about my main horse, old Buck. He was a main pickup horse. He was a 16-hand buckskin gilding, and he was part saddlebred and part draft horse.
Oh,
and
wow.
How he ever being a good horse, being with that breeding, but he was a cutting horse. I bought him as a 3-year-old. They were turning back at the cuttings on him, and I bought him and went ahead and finished him as a cutting horse. And he ended up being a champion cutting horse in Northern Illinois Cutting Horse Association like 6 years in a row.
Wow.
And been to the Congress. He placed in the Congress of cuttings. I mean, he was a whale of a horse, and I went to picking up on him after that. And he would just made a super pickup horse. He could run, had a lot of handle on him. He was a horse that made me as far as in rodeos. Everybody knew that horse and loved him.
Buck.
You know, he was a great horse. Probably weighed 1350.
Oh, big horse.
But could run. He could run.
And if he's a cutting horse, he's pretty cowy, right? So.
Oh, he had more cow in him. I mean, man, he could cow.
Yeah. And for our listeners, Randy, I think that's the first time I've used that term. Maybe we have in the past, but what's it mean if a horse is cowy?
It means that when they look at cattle and they're interested in them, and they want to work the cow.
Okay.
You know, they're cowy. Some horses you put in front of a cow and they look the other way.
Yeah.
Well, a horse that shows interest, that pin his ears and look at him, and that's called cowy, you know.
Okay.
When they move with the cow.
Okay. And I know you push bulls out during the bull riding, right? You don't pick up, but you push him out. How was he during the bull riding?
Oh, he was great. I roped a lot of bulls on him and drug a lot of bulls out on him.
Yeah. Did that cowiness come through? Did he want to work them?
Well, he's dragging them, so he really wasn't looking at them, you know.
Okay. But,
I mean, he was cowy. When you run calves and steers out, when you have to pick the reins up, you just, you know. The one rodeo maybe two rodeos, I pulled his bridle off and picked up the saddle bronc riding with no bridle.
No.
Yeah.
Intentionally you did that?
Yeah. His horse is broke now. I mean, you just get a hold of his mane and he'd spin him left or right and whoa and go. And I just jerked his bridle off and everybody looked, "What happened to your bridle?" I said, "I forgot it."
Now that's something. That's quite a trained horse. That is really cool.
Oh, yeah. He was an outstanding horse. I got him when he was 3 and he died at 29. He had a good life. And he was really nice. Never took a bad step in his life. He stayed sound. You know, he was just a good horse, you know.
And how old was he when you stopped working with him? Stopped hauling him?
22, I quit using him.
Okay.
I was riding him out there one day, and he had all sorts of go, you know. Drop your hand, he'd go. And one time I dropped my hand, and he didn't want to go. I mean, he went, but. He kind of had to ask him, and I said, "Well, he's telling me something."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's saying, "Hey, you know, I've had about enough."
Yeah.
So I didn't push him. I said, "Okay, I'm listening to you," and I retired him.
Oh, wow. Isn't that something?
You could just feel it was time, you know.
You bet. You know, and that's something we haven't talked a lot about on the show, that partnership, you know, that deep, deep, deep relationship that developed, yeah. right, with your horse. And
right.
he moves beyond just being a horse, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was a friend. I mean, he knew me and I knew him, and I knew what he was going to do and he knew what I was going to do.
Yeah.
Great horse.
So how'd you find him? I mean, three-year-old, he's already starting cutting, half draft horse, half saddlebred. Not your typical quarter horse. Right?
No, he wasn't. You know, he had the draft horse heaviness, but he had the saddlebred. He was real high stepping, you know.
Okay.
You know, everybody said he would merely carry the flag on him, that he'd dance to the music because he'd really get up there and step like a saddlebred.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, a friend of mine in Bloomington, Illinois, Don Ellis, cutting horse man, had him. I called him one day. I said, I want to buy a cutting horse. He said, well, I ain't got one, but I got a turnback horse that will make one. So we drove down there, and I rode this. I liked him. He was only 3 years old and really, really bronky, snorty. So I ended up buying him and brought him home and worked him on cows and got him cutting really good. And went on from there, and it wasn't nothing I couldn't do on him. We hazed on him, merrily barrel raced him. I mean, just everything you could do on one, we did.
So when you say he had a turnback horse.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, when the cutting horse goes in to cut a cow, you've got two turnback men that push the cattle back towards the cutting horse so that he can work them, you know.
Okay. Okay, and that's what he was doing, even at 3 years old.
That was what he was doing, you know. Okay. He wasn't cutting, but he was moving the cattle. He could take a pretty good horse and do that with, you know.
So why were you looking for a cutting horse, Randy? What was going on?
Oh, I always liked cutting, and I said, you know, I'd like to get into it, you know. Yeah. So we ended up getting him, and we took off, and we cut for years.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was president of the Cutting Horse Association for 2 years, and in the Illinois, Northern Illinois and Wisconsin. We did all them cuttings up there. And so, it was a lot of fun. It was great.
So you were riding as the cutting horse? You were riding?
Oh,
buck?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
And Larry Mahan was big in that, too. And I know we talked about him earlier. Did you ever talk cutting horses with him?
Yeah, Larry, he rode cutting horses for a long time. You know, and then we used to sit and talk cutting horses all the time. Yeah.
And you got to have a heck of a seat to ride a cutting horse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These guys nowadays are pretty, pretty good, you know.
What did you notice when you started cutting? Did you have to learn to ride just a touch different? I mean, these horses are so fast in the front end.
Yeah. Well, you just got to find out what your horse is doing and go with him, you know, and
yeah.
help them where they need help. And you know, okay. They've got these flags now that they put on a pulley that goes back and forth, and the guy's got a remote on their arm.
Oh, wow.
And they can work that back and forth by just pressing a button.
And that's how they're training them.
Well, that's how they start them, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You know, if the horse is not doing something just right on a real cow, they'll go to that flag where they can set it up. A real cow, you really can't set them up to make a mistake. So you let them make a mistake where you can set it up so you can correct it.
Okay.
It was a pretty good idea.
Okay. Okay. And big money in cutting.
Oh, boy. I've got a friend of mine down the road, Kobe Wood. He's been world champion cutting horse man a long time. We go over there to watch him cut sometimes, and he'll have 18 horses saddled in the arena.
Really? Okay.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And these aren't $750 horses, Randy.
No. They're not even $7,500. They're big, big money horses.
So what is big money? If a guy wanted to get in and be moderately competitive, right? What are you talking for a horse?
$40,000-$50,000 probably.
Okay. Okay.
You know? It's like the barrel horses; they're high. They're so high too, you know.
You bet.
$50,000 not much for a good barrel horse anymore.
Okay. What are you seeing for numbers out there in the world on the barrel racing?
Numbers as far as what?
Dollars, hot horses. you know, 40, 50, you said that's kind of bottom level these days.
Well, that's kind of average, you know. Okay. You can buy pretty good horse for 50,000.
Yeah.
My son's got a couple of them over there.
Okay.
They're pretty nice horses, you know. They cost them 30 to 50, I guess.
Oh my goodness. And what did you pay for Buck when you got him as a 3-year-old?
$600.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And believe me, that was tough to come up with the 600.
Yeah. That was a lot of money back then, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of money back then. But I even got the receipt from him. I kept in the scrapbook, you know.
Okay.
And everybody goes, "You only get 600 for that horse?" I said, "Yeah." And he was worth $160,000.
So
as I was concerned.
So did your cutting cut into your rodeoing? I mean, that, were you cutting for money? Was it buckles? What were you going for?
Yeah, we were cutting for money and buckles. You know, I won a bunch of buckles cutting on him, and it wasn't big money, you know. It was just a small association in Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
But when we go to the bigger shows like Congress in Ohio,
yeah,
it was big money there, you know.
Okay. Okay. And you did well at the Congress in Columbus.
Yeah, I was one time out of 45, which was pretty good.
You did what out of 45?
Third place out of 45.
Okay.
And then the Open Cup, yeah, that was
okay.
That was a pretty good hit.
And do you got to go hard and consistently to be able to place third in a competition that size? In other words, are you out going every weekend somewhere?
Well, locally, mm-hmm, never went very far in the cutting deal.
Okay.
You know, kind of okay, stayed in the area, you know.
Yeah.
But it was more, I just liked it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you get one of the cutting horses underneath you, it's just, wow, it's a great feeling.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. Okay. Good old Buck.
Good old Buck. I never forget him. I got pictures of him all over.
Okay. Well, send me a picture or two of Buck.
I remember at the Cutting Horse Fraternity in Fort Worth, they'd have five judges, and they'd be sitting in little, like, tree stands, you know, so they can't see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And at night, when the cutting's over, they had security take them to the hotels, so they couldn't talk to each other.
Oh, really? Okay.
And they weren't allowed to talk to each other, the judges, through the whole cutting deal.
Yeah.
They'd go to the hotel, and they'd pick them up and take them back. And,
yeah.
You know.
Now, in the cutting performance, it's all judged, or is time part of it?
Well, they get 2.5 minutes, and usually they cut from every 3 cows in 2.5 minutes. Some guys will cut 2 cows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a time deal. It's scoring on the horse, you know.
Okay. And, I mean, if I could come out and do really, really well on just one, and it takes me 30 seconds, would I place? Or do I've got to, I mean, is it then time comes in? No, you got 2.5 minutes. You got to do more than one steer.
Yeah, you've got to eat up your whole 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, you've got to keep going. If they got a clock, usually a big clock behind them, and they can see how much time they got. They got 90 seconds or 30 seconds, and they just go get another cow, or else kind of mosey around taking it easy, trying to eat up time. But most of them will grab a third cow and, you know, try to gather more points.
Okay.
It's a pretty good deal at cutting nowadays.
Yeah. And you got out because you said, "I'm taking Buck to the, going to start picking up on him." That was kind of where you went?
Yeah, I knew he was a good horse, and I just went to picking up on him because we were doing more rodeos and cuttings, you know.
Yeah. And never tempted through the rest of the time to get back into it, dabble back into cutting?
We went through a few of them off and on, you know.
Did
but,
you? Okay.
You know, he wasn't fine-tuned anymore after picking up Bronx, you know.
Yeah.
That cutting deal, you gotta stay hitched to them horses. Then people will open them horses for hours.
Yeah.
You know, just before they even go to a cow, you know.
You bet. Did you say they had, like, flags they worked?
Yeah, they got a little flag deal on a cable, mm-hmm, that goes maybe 50, 75 foot along the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And some people put a calf on it, you know.
Yeah.
doll calf or something.
Yeah.
Then the guy's got a remote on his wrist. Okay. And he can stop it, make it go back and forth any way he wants. So he can correct the horse's bad on one side. He can correct that by that way.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, if you're on a live cow, you don't know what the cow is going to do. But that deal, you can make it do what you want.
Okay.
It's a pretty good tool.
That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. They used to have one that was a looked like a Hereford bull with horns, and you'd get inside it and drive it, and that thing really worked good.
Oh, wow.
They could spin that around. I don't know why they quit using them, but you had to have somebody drive it. But, man, it was cool. that thing would spin like a dime.
Now, did you do a lot of training on him to cut, or was he just enough natural? I mean, you worked him all week.
No, you gotta work him. You know, you gotta get him fine tuned.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, it isn't something you just let him sit all week and go to a cutting.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta have him riser.
Right.
Because there's so many guys in there that got great horses. You know.
Yeah. And what did you do for him throughout the year when you're picking up? What did you do to keep him legged up and conditioned?
We'd ride him, you know. Yeah. We had a hot walker. We'd get on and put him on a hot walker. And, you know, because winter times was the rough times.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was doing the finals in January, picking up the finals, I'd always load my horses up and go to indoor arena and ride them at night.
Okay.
You know, for two weeks ahead of time.
Yeah.
We'd go over every night to ride, keep these horses rode, because you couldn't ride them outside, you know, so snow and ice.
Yeah. And that time of the year, I mean, you're going to bring them into a building. Were they outside mostly, or did you have them stalled?
They were all stalled in the winter. Okay. Turn outside during the day and stalled at night.
So they had a good winter coat then.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of my old buckskin horse, I'd body clip him.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
Because he got hairy. Yeah. All day long hair.
Yeah.
But then I'd keep a blanket and hood on him all winter, you know?
Okay. Okay.
Cause you take him over and get him in that indoor arena and get him hot, and then the hair never dries. You know, you can't haul him home for an hour or so afterwards. And
yeah.
It was just easier to body clip him and from there.
Okay. And you did all your finals was in Tulsa. They were all in Tulsa.
I think we did Oklahoma City towards the end.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of them were Tulsa, but
yeah.
I think the last one we did in Oklahoma City and then a couple before.
Okay. And weather that time of the year is not, I mean, it can be cold, but was okay for the most part.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good.
Probably better than around a lake there in Illinois, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Got pretty brutal around there.
Oh, man. That's some of the stuff I don't miss by living in Louisville.
Still am in the zebra business.
Zebras?
You know, we had a... I lived in Illinois. I had a herd of zebras, and we raise colts every year and sell the colts, and had a bunch of mares and had a little breeding deal.
How did you get in the zebra business?
Well, everybody said you couldn't do anything with a zebra.
Yeah.
And I said, by God, I bet I can. And I bought one time and broke them to ride and went on from there. And over the years, we broke a bunch of them to ride. You never could trust them really good, but, you know, but.
So how did they compare to a horse as far as mentality, as far as disposition?
Their idea is to get away from you. You know, like the old saying is, a horse will do what you ask him. A zebra wants to see your resume, you know.
Just out of a, well, I can do it kind of gumption, you said, I'm going to buy me a zebra and I'm going to train him. And then the rest, you just got busy with it.
Right. And I went through a few of them and I went, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden, one time I got a pretty good zebra and we broke him.
Yeah.
And Marley rode him in parades at rodeos.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And I mean, he was really good zebra, broke to ride, and I sold him. Finally sold him to a lady that just had to have him.
Okay.
And she kept him until he was 26 when he died.
Really? Okay. So pretty much built like a horse, pretty much the
same?
Oh,
yeah, but they're not, about 50 inches tall, like a big Welsh pony.
Okay. And disposition, are they kind of like a pony kind of a disposition?
Well, they're kind of more on the wild side. It's really hard to get a good one. I mean, you go through a bunch of them before you got one that wants to play with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
we went through quite a few of them.
And the zebras that you're still in the zebra business.
Yeah.
And you sell the colt where?
Yeah, just they go all over. Zebras are really easy to sell.
Are they really? Okay.
My son had one. Last week, he took to the local horse sale in Cleburne, Texas. He brought 21,000, and he was a week old.
A zebra for 21,000.
Yeah.
I mean, so
he was a week old.
So they're going to put him on an exotic animal farm.
Oh, who knows?
Zoo.
Who knows? No.
Holy
probably just
cow.
Somebody with a lot of money, and they wanted something different.
My
he
goodness.
Was a nice little colt. But
okay.
My wife raises a lot of zebras on, you know. She doesn't give them a bottle, gives them a bucket of milk, but raises them on milk.
Really?
When they're 3 days old.
Okay. You wean them that early, or the mom shuts them down? What happens?
Well, if you get them that early, you kind of imprint them, and, you know, and they learn people instead of the herd of zebras and stay wild, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work. We've had a lot of them that we raised on a bucket that still didn't want to be nice, but then we've had some that were really super nice. And, we had one that was so nice one time, and people came from New Mexico to buy them, and they pulled in the yard, and they didn't have a trailer with them. And I went, oh, these are tire kickers.
Yeah.
So they ended up buying them. I said, well, how are you going to haul them? Well, they put them in the back seat of the truck.
Inside the cab.
Inside the cab.
What? What could go wrong with that, right?
Yeah, what could go wrong with that? And he sent me a video, and the zebra had his head on his shoulder. Oh, they're driving on the road.
Oh, my.
It was pretty neat, you know.
Okay. So
you wouldn't do that with every one of them. But.
So they're wild. Are they mean? I mean, do you just got to watch them?
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they can be pretty mean.
Okay.
You know, they can, if you get them riled up, they can.
Bite,
they can
kick, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Bad to kick. I'm bad to bite.
Yeah.
You know, I've got one here now, a gelding that is. Super, super tame. I mean, you can do anything with them.
Yeah.
I got a little act on them. You can get all vice commands, worked at liberty, get them on a pedestal, bow down,
really?
Lay down.
Really? Are you hauling him?
No, we don't do it. I just for my fun, I'd go out there you can work him without putting anything on him. Just talk to him.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
You say, get up on that pedestal, Joe. He'll walk over and get up on the pedestal.
Oh, my gosh. Well, if we got some rodeo entertainers listening here, Randy, you might get some calls, no?
I'm not about to go on the road anymore. I told Marilee I should put her on the road, and she said, I've had enough.
Well, if any rodeo entertainers give you a call and say, hey, I'm looking for a trick zebra.
Yeah, if anything can go wrong, that's what they'll do. They'll go wrong at a rodeo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, this one, I trust this one to do anything. You can just do anything you want to do with it.
Well, that's neat. That is really, really
cool.
I
didn't get him broke to ride. My son Wade used to ride him when he was younger, but kind of broke him of the habit. That's what he got bucked off a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, they're built the same. They got withers. They got all that sort of thing like a horse.
Well, they don't have much withers. That's
okay.
The trouble.
Okay, saddle
you know,
goes
like
over
little,
the top.
Like a big fat pony, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be done.
They're pretty neat.
Okay.
We had them. We had the camels.
Camels.
We were there for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like to have camels?
Well, I didn't know anything about them, and I bought one day, a two-year-old. And I said, well, I'm going to break them to ride. And so we flew with him for a while. I got him saddled and got up and got on him. And well, the first thing he did is turn his head around and grab the saddle horn in his mouth.
Oh, wow.
And I slid off the back of him, and I said, whoa. We ended up getting him broke, and he rode pretty good. We rode him in parades and different functions. He was pretty nice.
And
we had a lot of camels over the years.
You did? So
yeah,
how'd you get introduced to camels, for goodness sakes?
I always liked something that's different, you know.
Okay.
You know, I didn't, you know, something a little flair to it, you know.
Yeah.
Not everybody did camels. Not everybody did zebras. You know,
And don't they spit at you? Camels?
They can.
Yeah.
They can, but them kind you get rid of. You don't keep those kind around.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you can get some that'll never spit.
Yeah.
And you can get some that spit all the time, you know.
I'll be darned. Okay. I'll be darned. And where'd you buy the camel? How'd you even find a camel?
Oh, they're easy to find.
Are they really?
I look out the door, and my son's got half a dozen of them in his yard. He's got some white, pure white ones, too.
Camels?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you got him into this business, into the exotic animal business?
Right, and he's really into it. I mean,
yeah.
If you name it, he's got it there.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, every kind of antelope and, you know, it's there, everything. Okay. Zebras, camels.
Okay.
Wildebeest. He's got a whole lot of stuff.
What's the coolest one he's got? What's the coolest animal if he's...
I kind of like the wildebeest myself. They're kind of a pretty blue color, and I'm kind of wild looking.
Okay. And they're not domesticated. You don't walk up and pet them.
No, they're from Africa, and they're pretty wound up, you know.
Okay. Okay. And no elephants.
No elephants. We get a chance to be around a bunch of elephants and tigers. I worked with some tigers for a while.
You worked with tigers?
Yeah, there was a down in Illinois. There was a friend of mine, a circus trainer from Florida, came up to work. This guy had like 40 elephants and had a bunch of white tigers that he was training for a circus act. Well, this buddy of mine came up, Lancelot Ramos was his name. He's from Florida, and he came up and he'd work the tigers, and he'd have us come over and watch them. So every morning we'd go over there, Marley and I, and we'd sit outside the cage and watch him work these tigers, and he'd work 14 at a time. And it was just so impressive. I mean, he had them doing everything. I mean,
he got into a cage with 14 different tigers at the same time.
Oh, yeah. It was. And we're the only people there was him and his wife and Marilyn and me. And I thought, well, if he ever gets in trouble, what would we do?
Yeah, what would you do? So,
well, sure enough, one day this female tiger, he said something to her, and she come right to him. And I mean, she was coming to him. He was backing up.
Yeah.
And she meant business, and he clunked her over the head, and she stopped. And,
okay.
Boy, then she just kept coming harder. And
okay.
He's backing up, and I thought, oh, boy,
yeah,
this is it.
Yeah.
He clunked her a second time, and she kind of quit and went back and sat down. But I said, oh, boy.
Yeah.
That was the closest I ever seen anybody get made up.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What a mess that would be, wouldn't it? So did you get in the cage and work with him, Randy?
Yeah. He said to me one day, he said, we get done. He said, if I leave one in here, you want to come in and work him? I said, whoa, would I ever? So he got the rest of them out and left one in there for me.
Okay.
And I got up, Marley said, don't you go in there. She said, that's the most stupid thing you could ever do.
Yeah.
Don't go in there. I said, I have to.
You have to do it. Okay.
Well, I went in there, and he told me what to do and told me how to work him and call his name. And he gave me a whip. He said, now use this whip. Don't hit him with it.
Yeah.
Just use it as a pointer.
Yeah, okay.
Up and down,
okay.
Left and right.
Okay. Okay.
And then we had another little stick that he put a piece of meat on that you'd, when he did something good, you'd reach with a stick and give him a bite of meat.
Okay. You didn't walk up and hand it to him.
No, you did not hand it to him. That's what you didn't. You had a stick you put it on. But
yeah.
He just told me, he said, stay far away that he doesn't swipe you with his claws, you know.
Okay.
So I worked him. He worked pretty good, and I got him to get on the pedestal and then got him to rear up and strike out. And what an experience to stand in front of a tiger that's reared up and
I can't imagine
swiping his claws at you with his mouth open and growling. Yeah. It was pretty intense.
That would be intense. That would be intense.
I went home. I was on a high for 2 days. I was that was the most exciting thing I think I've ever did was ever done in my life, was getting caged with a tiger. You know,
that's pretty amazing. That's pretty darn amazing.
I had everybody told me. Tiger people said that was the stupidest thing he ever did. He said that tiger didn't know you.
Right.
He knows that guy, but he didn't know you.
Is that right? So yeah. So but I mean, it's all on. I have to imagine. You know, it's all on. Do they sense who you are? Right. Do they sense you're a serious guy? You know what I mean.
I would imagine they can figure you out in a heartbeat. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I survived.
Yeah.
And I thought, if you're going to go, what a way to go.
What a way to go.
The story would be,
yeah,
the story of your passing would be unbelievable.
What would the title of that story be, Randy? What would we call that?
Being stupid enough to go in there with them.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Yeah,
it was pretty good. It was pretty intense, but it was fun, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I always like to do the odd things, you know.
Okay. And was it the odd things that got you involved in rodeo? I mean, was it looking over the fence saying, I could do that?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I always had a horse when I was,
yeah,
from the time I was 12 years old, and got to watch a few rodeos in the summer, and I thought, man, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was a long, hard road, but, you know, it just got better and better every year, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, that's, I like that. The tiger story, like, and that, the zebra,
like,
story.
That story with Marlon, how Marlon got started, you know?
Yeah.
That was a pretty cool story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What'd they do? They actually snuck in, didn't they? Something,
yeah,
like
that's
that.
What he said, yeah. Somebody gave him the rig and the shaps and spurs, and it didn't work out too good, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's fun.
Tried to make life entertaining, you know.
Well, that's certainly an exotic animals. I mean, that's the wild ones. That's pretty neat. No lions ever.
No. You really can't have them, you know.
Can't have them?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you're regulated with the USDA and that.
I see.
Yeah. So that, you don't want to be trading lions and tigers around.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. And no hippos or rhinos or gorillas or anything like that?
Just a lot of monkeys, a lot of monkeys over the years.
So what kind of monkeys? I know.
Capuchins, spider monkeys, capuchins.
Is that what Marilee used in her act?
She used a capuchin monkey.
Okay. And where back in the day, all right, let me back up. How did Marilee get that act started? Where in the world did she get monkeys, and how did she train them to ride a dog?
Well, I saw the act one time. A guy had a monkey riding a dog at the rodeo, and I thought, man, this would be kind of a neat act if we could find the monkeys. Well, I checked around some of my exotic people, and they gave me the number of a guy in Florida. Well, he'd send me three monkeys at a time, and we'd try them and keep the ones that would work and get rid of the ones that wouldn't. And so we trained them. We were in the border collie business at that time. We had probably 30 border collie dogs we trained for working.
Holy cow, for cattle?
So, yeah, cattle and sheep.
Cattle
and
sheep, okay. For competitions and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we went to sheepdog trials all over the country.
You did?
I went to them, Marilee went to them. Yeah, we traveled everywhere to go to sheepdog trial.
And you were directing them? You were, what's the language? You were competing?
I was a handler. Marilee was a handler.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many dogs would you take to a competition? How many would you enter in a weekend?
Usually just one.
Okay.
One a piece, you know.
Yeah.
It has to be a good one, you know.
Yeah. And you trained them from a pup all the way up through?
Right. We trained them and told them how to take the saddle, and getting them used to the monkey was wasn't real fun, but.
Yeah, did they? What did they think of the monkeys? I mean,
they
seriously,
they didn't like it. Some of them wouldn't go for it at all. You know, they said, "I don't want no monkey on my back." We had three or four, maybe five, really good monkey dogs that didn't mind. They didn't bother them a bit.
Yeah, and the training you used, what is it? You send them out, you bring them back. I'm just thinking now of your working your. Yeah, what are some of the base commands you would teach, Randy, if you're working cattle or sheep?
If the livestock's way far out, you want to send to the right. This is Scottish turns from Scotland. You say away, away, and then to the left you'd say come by, come by. And then they'd get around behind them. Of course, you'd stop them, then get them to walk up straight, and then you could flank them left or right. And then you had to go through a bunch of different obstacles with the sheep. And then when you got through the obstacles, you had to put them in a pen. And then after you come out of the pen, then your dog had to sort one sheep off and hold it like a cutting horse.
Oh, wow.
and you'd be standing there, and you'd call your dog in, and he'd come in the herd and take one off and work them back and forth, and that would be the end of the competition. But
I'll be done.
We did that for a long time.
So cutting horses and hauling, rodeo and hauling, sheep dog trials and hauling. All this was going on kind of at the same time, Randy?
Yeah, just about.
Was it all year long? All winter and everything?
Year round.
Okay.
You know, especially when Steve Gander had them winter rodeos, you know, and all the buildings, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was something to do any month of the year.
Oh, my goodness. It sure sounds like it. And what was it like to have the monkeys? Because you had to handle the monkeys. The monkeys went with you on the road. Three monkeys?
I love it. Yeah, they were. We kept them with us. They slept with us in the camper, and you know, we didn't just throw them in a cage and forget about them. We had two monkeys, Cisco and Pancho. We built them as the world's smallest cowboys. Mm-hmm. Well, they were just super, super gentle, and you could take them out and play with them. And
okay,
you know, we had some that, they weren't so nice, but these two, we had them for over 20 years, I guess.
Really?
Okay. One monkey was 47 when he died. Wow. And we figured the other one was 35 or 6 when she died.
Really? Had no idea they lived that long. And these aren't very big monkeys, right? These are, what they weigh?
About 6 pounds.
About 6 pounds. Okay.
Yeah, you had to try to get the lightest one you could, you know, for the dogs.
Yeah.
Sake, you know?
Yeah. So you ran a barrel pattern with the dogs?
No, we never did that.
We just
worked the sheep, you know.
Oh, okay.
So put the sheep through different obstacles and pen them with the dogs and the monkeys.
So you had to haul sheep too?
Oh, yeah. We haul our own sheep, our monkeys, our dogs, our horses.
Oh, my goodness. How big of a trailer did you have? I know you had big living quarters. How many places?
It was a 6-horse trailer. Put 6 horses in there, and they had a 12-foot living apartment with everything you need.
And you hauled? You didn't haul 6 horses, did you?
No, we hauled like 4.
And then sheep.
The sheep and the goats and the monkeys were in the other compartment.
And you had goats?
Sheep. Sheep.
Oh, I thought you said goats. Sheep and the dogs. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Wow.
I don't know if I told you that one story when the guy sent me 3 monkeys from Florida. He sent them in a box, but you open the top and to get them out. Well, I went in the barn and shut the door in the tack room, and I opened the top of the box to get a hold of them. Well, of course, right then they all jumped out, and here comes the neighbor. He come walking and opened the door. Out the door the monkeys go.
Oh, my goodness.
3 monkeys. Run down the road, went in the hayfield, and they're running through this hayfield. I jump on a horse bareback. I go to chasing them, and they're out in the middle of this hayfield, and I'm circling them, and they're scared to death, you know. They're afraid of the horse. And this, well, here come Marilee. She walked out there, and the monkeys were so scared, they run over to her.
Oh, wow.
And they jumped in her arms.
Oh, wow.
And she had to walk, maybe an eighth of a mile back to the house. And she had a hold of their legs and their tails. They were biting her screaming.
Yeah.
She got back in there. She had monkey bites all over. But, you know, she never turned them loose.
Okay.
She held on to the very end.
Okay. Well, that had to be frightening for them monkeys. They don't know where they are, right?
No, they didn't know what was going on, you know. And they see a horse chasing them, but they ended up being okay after we got them gentled down.
So they sent you the monkeys in a box. UPS, I take it?
No, O'Hare Airport in Chicago.
Okay.
You're going to pick them up.
They flew them up for you.
Yeah,
flew them up. Okay. So you have a habit of getting on a horse's bareback and chasing banditos and monkeys.
Yeah, didn't have time to saddle them. Something happened like that fast, you know. Just got to jump on with a halter and go.
Yeah. No banditos. These were like little banditos, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were. They were really cool monkeys. I really liked them.
Okay.
Merrily, she didn't like them so much because she fooled them all the time to get them dressed.
Yeah.
And everything. But she wasn't in love with them, but she tolerated them. But I really liked them.
Yeah. So where do you get monkey outfits? Where do you get the cowboy hats?
Merrily made her outfits for them.
Okay.
We went to a store one time, took the monkey in, got some doll clothes.
Yeah.
One of them. I made shaps for them, and they had little cowboy hats they wore. And,
okay.
You know, it was pretty neat. They had a little Western saddle on.
That is pretty neat. That is pretty neat. I'll be darned.
Yeah, what? She did that act for over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
With the same two monkeys.
Everybody loved it with same two monkeys, yeah.
So you wasn't just picking up. You wasn't just bulldogging. You wasn't just bronc riding.
No, everybody, a lot of acts too.
Man, and the amount of work it takes to go up and down the road hauling all that stuff, chores and packing and, you know, everything.
Oh, yeah. I had to, you know, when Merrily's act was up, I had to go out and carry the pedestal off for her, the gates for the dogs, the pedestal for the horses. You know, we're going all the time when the rodeo start.
You bet. Isn't that something? All started with getting a horse when you were 12, right?
Yeah, that's all started.
Well, that's interesting. Very, very cool.
My boy got bit by a camel really bad one time here a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he almost lost his arm.
Really? Where'd the camel catch him?
Well, he went in the trailer to feed him, and he was shaking out the feed. It's a big bull camel. And the camel grabbed him by the arm, by the wrist.
Oh, wow.
And I mean picked him up, and I mean was slammed him from side to side of the trailer. And he fought that camel and fought him. And this kid that worked for him, he come running in there. Well, he wasn't about to do anything. And Wade was hollering, and another hired man was just leaving. Well, he came back in and he saw what was happening. He grabbed the pitchfork and stuck the camel and got him to drop him.
Wow.
Well, he dropped him and he drug him out of the trailer and they airlifted him to the hospital. And his arm was just mangled. I mean, it was just, and he cut all the nerves, tendons, ligaments, everything was severed.
Oh, wow.
And they worked on him all night long and they got everything put back together. And I got his arm healed perfect, and he's still bulldogging with it.
Really?
It doesn't look very good. I mean, it's all looks like a chainsaw hit it, but his arm's 100%.
So camel locked on.
Could have been a bad deal.
Camel locked on. Oh my goodness! Sure, sounds like it.
See, they get you in their mouth and they try to get you in the ground and kneel on you, and then when they kneel on you, that's when it's over, you know. But
so
he said, "I stayed on my feet."
Okay.
Much as I could, you know.
Okay. Because if they kneel on, what do they do? They just keep biting?
Kneel on you. Keep biting you. They hold you down and bite you. Oh. I mean, they bit the heck out of them.
Oh, my goodness.
It was pretty bad.
Wow. Never turn your back on them, right? And just always assume the worst.
Right. He still works with camels. He doesn't seem to bother him.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's an incredible story. My goodness.
Yeah. Life's been an experience, I'll tell you.
I would say so. My goodness. I just am sitting here thinking of all the people you've met, all the famous horses you've hauled around, two monkeys that live into their 30s and 40s. That's pretty
right.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's a pretty
amazing story. What advice would you give to a young person that's interested in the adventures or wanting to have the kind of adventures you have had, whether it's rodeo or you name it, anything, and you've done so much? What's your advice?
Well, if young person came to me and asked how they could get into different things, you'd have to find out right away if they're really sincere or they just wanted something to do, you know. They'd have to show you that they really meant it, you know. And I've had so many guys come to me and say, we want to pick up. Well, they no more wanted to pick up than man on the moon. You know, they just want to get out there. But, you know, if you get the right kid and he really acts like he wants to learn, you know, there's plenty of places you can go learn. Plenty of people out there that'll help you do in just about anything you want to do, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, if I got a kid that wants to work tigers, I know a guy that will show him how. If he wants to work horses, cutting horses, whatever, you know, I've got people that will be glad to do that.
Yep.
It was old Jack Wiseman. He was quite a guy.
Yeah, I put up a reel and on Facebook, in 30-second reel, and Marlon was talking about cowboys and bikers.
Yeah.
And he talked about it was always good to have Jack with you.
Yeah. My son Wade hauled with him.
He did.
For the last 2 years. I said, Jack, this boy really wants the bulldog.
Yeah.
I said, can you take him? He said, yeah. So he took him under his wing.
How old was Wade when he started hauling with him?
Probably 17.
Oh, wow. Okay. And yeah, they went everywhere. We saw them up in the Northeast. We saw them in New York and Pennsylvania.
Oh, that Jack could go anywhere.
Yeah.
My boy got a free scholarship to college in Weatherford, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Everything paid. And he went to school there so they could be on the rodeo team. Well, Jack would pick him up on Fridays, and they'd go rodeoing and then have him back on Mondays. And finally he said, I can't do this school anymore. He said, this road's killing me.
Wow.
So he had to come home. But
okay.
He said, Jack will really, really make you go down the road.
You bet. A lot of going. I mean, you're somewhere all the time, right? You're
and
busy.
A good guy. Yeah. He really took good care of him. Taught him how to rodeo, taught him how to enter, taught him how to bulldog. I mean, just did really good with him.
Taught him the business.
Taught him how to haze. Yeah. He hazed for Jack a lot of times.
Okay.
You know, he got a big experience out of that.
You bet. And Jack did that for years, right?
Oh, for
lots of guys.
Jack rode bulls really good. Bulldog really good.
Yeah. Any particular Jack Wiseman story, Randy?
Jack was telling me one time he come out of the beer store and this black guy was standing there and pulled a gun out. Told them to get down on their knees, and said, Jack got down and he said, give me your money. Jack pulled $2 out and threw it at his feet, and the guy got mad. He said, $2, I'm just going to shoot you. And Jack says, I heard the hammer cock back. He said, I jumped up and whooped him.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I said, well, Jack had one time he had a hole in the side of his bullet hole inside of his truck. He drove around. Somebody took a shot at him.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You wanted Jack on your side, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I've seen him go, and he's pretty tough. Pretty tough. I don't think you could hurt him, you know.
Yeah. Went a long time.
Oh, yeah. Long time.
Long time.
We did a rodeo one time, and somebody was hollering about the bulldog and was standing there mocking everybody. And Rick Chafin jumped over the fence, and they started to fight. Well, here comes Jack, and I thought, oh, boy. Boy, Jack jumped off his horse, and he got a hold of this guy, and, I mean, he hammered him. I mean, he took all the fight out of him.
Now, there's a lot of things you can do at a rodeo, but I think picking a fight with a bulldogger would be, like, last on the list, wouldn't it?
That would be the last thing I'd want to do, especially nowadays, you know. But
yeah. Maybe some of these little bull riders or bareback riders, maybe, you know, but a bulldogger?
No, they'll throw you around like a rag doll.
Yeah. Wade's still going?
Yeah, he was in Fort Worth and Mesquite last week.
Okay.
He's still going.
So is he still doing some IPRA stuff or?
No. He's doing all PRCA.
All PRCA stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He always makes that, what's that, finals in Louisville.
Oh, the Great Lakes?
Great Lakes, yeah. He's made that. He's not going to make it this year, but he's made it for years.
Oh, my goodness. I'd probably watch him rope, or I'd probably watch him dog there then.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I don't know. He's been there going forever, you know.
Yeah. Is he still dogging or just roping at this point?
Yeah, now he's dogging.
He is.
He doesn't do much roping anymore.
Oh, he doesn't? He doesn't?
No.
Okay.
No, he just... mostly bulldogs.
Okay.
Like the other night, I walked outside, and he was bulldogging all by himself. He had steers in the chute, mm-hmm. had half a dozen steers backed up, and he had got a little chute that he kicks open and
yeah.
runs out there on foot and throws them. And
oh, wow.
One right after another.
Okay.
I remember the Painter Association was offering $5,000 bonus if anybody won the finals on a paint horse, and they offered $500 every time you won a rodeo on a paint horse. Well, Wade's horse was a paint horse, and these $500 checks kept coming in, and then he went to the finals and won the average and got $5,000.
Holy cow!
From the Painter Association.
Okay.
But he's about the only paint horse was going.
Well, $5,000 to win the average, that's about, from the Paint Horse Association, that's about what the average probably paid, wasn't it?
Oh, he didn't. Yeah, I think he went $2,700 yeah. on the winning the average and got $5,000 bonus from the
Absolutely.
Paint Horse deal.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's neat. So yeah, he was hauling.
It's really funny that. Yeah. That horse belonged to me, you know, and I was going to make a pickup horse on him, and he made a bulldogging horse on him, and we're going to finals, and I said, I'll just sell you that horse. I said, I'll take what I gave for him. No. I said, well, if you win the finals, there's $5,000. You'll make money. He wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
He won the finals, and he looked at me like, can we still do it? I said, no. Oh, that was funny. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Paint horse. Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he was a good horse.
And how long did he run him?
Oh, he bought him when he was 6 years old, and he ran until he was 26.
Oh, wow.
About 20 years, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he was a nice horse.
Okay. Okay. Wow. And some of the stories, and man, you just listen and go, holy cow, the things these guys and gals were doing back then. Like yourself, I mean, pretty amazing. And I'm always curious, how in the world did you get into this? You know, yeah. What were you thinking? You know, how
yeah,
did
you
get
into
So
that's what my wife said when we left. She said, when the tiger did, she said, what were you thinking?
Yeah, yeah.
She said, are you crazy?
Yeah, yeah. And
I said, what a way to go.
What a way to go. I like that. That may be the name of our episode. What a way to go.
What a way to go.
What a way to go. We hope that you enjoyed this second episode, part two of our podcast with Randy Steffen, IPRA cowboy, IFR pickup man, just so many things he's done, wild, exotic animals, getting in a cage with a tiger, oh my. Now, if you do enjoy this episode, please share with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. We're always looking for friends to help get these stories out there into the world. And to make your listening easier, you can find us on all the major streaming platforms. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Search for Beyond the Chutes. That's C-H-U-T-E-S. And follow us. Like us. Rate us. Give us comments. Let us hear from you. Subscribe, give us a 5-star rating. In this social media world, it helps get these stories into circulation. The more interactions there are, the higher the ratings are, the more they get offered up to a whole bunch of new people, and that's what we're looking for. Now, talking about getting things up and offered to a bunch of folks, if you like reels, you know, those 30, 40 second short videos, we've got them. You can check us out on Beyond the Chutes Facebook page and click follow. Go watch. I'm telling you, we are having so much fun making these reels. And we just released one with Randy talking about Larry Mahan, the great legendary cowboy Larry Mahan. He met Larry when Randy was 17 and Larry was 19. So we're going to invite you to watch it, share it. Help us get these great stories out into the world. You are our advertising department. So do your job, share them, have fun, like them, do anything you'd like to do. And we invite you to check out our webpage, all the episodes, and we're up over 100 episodes now. So many pictures, so many great, great pictures. Tom Wood's pictures up there, and Deb Vaughn's pictures are up there. So go check those out. And we've got our partners page. Of course, we've got the IPRA up there and Parasite Systems and all kinds of great places up there on the website for you to hang out. So come on over, check it out. Love to hear some comments and some feedback on what you're thinking. We've been talking about putting up some merchandise, so we'll see where that all heads. And I want to give a great big thank you to Parasite Systems for their support with our podcast. They've been there from darn near the beginning, and we're a year and a half into this podcast. And Parasite Systems, what a great service that they provide to farmers and ranchers and rodeo cowboys and cowgirls, reiners and cutters and just everybody. Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic system for pasture animals, your horses, your cattle, your goats, your sheep, and now for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats. And if you want to keep your horses, and we all do, if you want to keep your horses in top condition, we got to know exactly what kind of parasites they are fighting. You take a fecal sample, you take a poo pot, you send it in to Parasite Systems. They can run the test. They'll send you an email back. They'll tell you exactly what it is, parasites and how many eggs per gram and all that sort of thing. And you take that to your vet and say, this is what I'm fighting. Your vet will say, this is exactly what you want to do to treat them. There is a possibility of eradicating parasites from our farms and from our ranches. So you want to check them out, Parasite System. You can find them at Parasite, S-I-G-H-T, systems.com, parasitesystems.com. We've got a coupon code, BTC023, for 50% off your mail-in test kits. And you can find them on a partners page up there on beyondtheshoots.show. And another shout out. I listen to a lot of podcasts about a lot of different subjects. Rodeo, racing, politics, health, spiritual, you name it, it's out there. I listen to a lot of stuff. I want to encourage you to listen to Rodeo Roots podcast, Rob and Dana Gann and Blue Jeans. They're out in the world. They're rodeoing hard. They're traveling a bunch, and they're recording some great, great interviews. And you can find them on all the major streaming platforms as well. They just did a great interview with Robbie Hodges. It's so important to get these stories recorded. One day, this is my prediction, one day these stories are really going to matter. Folks, after we're gone, folks are going to find these stories and go, my goodness, somebody shared these stories, recorded these stories. It's going to matter. And a big thank you, speaking of sharing memories and recording memories, a big thank you to the IRA Project Facebook group for all their help and guidance. Mr. Tim Sparks, thank you for all that you do. And, of course, Marlon Harris, you really helped us connect with the rodeo greats of the IPRA and introduced us to a bunch of new folks. As a matter of fact, right now, Marlon Harris is on his way to Guthrie, Texas, to this 4/6 Remuda sale, the annual sale they have out there. He's going to be rubbing elbows with a lot of important folks. And Taylor Sheridan of Yellowstone fame is actually going to be out there. And we are going to be recording hoping to record with Marlon as he'll give us an update on what happened out there at the 4/6. Wow, covered a lot of ground today. A lot of good stuff going on. This is Beyond the Chutes. Until next time, this is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.